In 2009, anthropologist Maria Castaneda de la Paz was on vacation in Mexico City. During a luncheon there, she was fed a tidbit of information that changed the entire tone of this vacation, from rest and relaxation to the kind of adventure that most archaeologists dream of having. She was told about three lost Aztec codices, the kind of manuscripts that do not pop up every day. And 15 years and about $500,000 later, the Mexican government now has all three of these codices in a museum soon for us to be able to see. This just happened in March of this year, so it's all fresh and new information, and what we do know that's in the codices is very interesting. But to me, what's more interesting is the manner that they were found and who had had them all this time. So strap in and let's discuss the lost codices of San Andreas Tetepilco. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now, the three codices are post-colonial in nature. That is to say, they were written after the Spanish had arrived. And we know this a few different ways. One of them is the artistic stylings are definitely post-colonial. Before that, the Aztecs didn't include shading or three dimensions in their art, and they did after this. The next thing that really tells us that this is post-colonial is the Spanish writing that's inside of the dang thing. That's a pretty good giveaway right there. And of course, then there's the depiction of the Spanish themselves, including Cortez depicted as a centurion. So there's really no debate. These were written after the Spanish had arrived. And it covers, these three cover three different historical things about the region. The histories of three things that were, I'm so good at words. These three things cover the history of three important areas to the people at the time. One of them is that region there of Tetepilco. The other one was the inventory of the church of Tetepilco, of San Andreas Tetepilco at that point, and the stuff that was inside of it. But the other one's the really cool one. It covers the history, including the founding of Tenochtitlan. Nothing major, right? The codex titled Map of the Founding of Tetepilco includes both the history of the founding of the town and some of the features of the landscape. The next codex is the inventory of the church of San Andreas Tetepilco, which consists mostly of pictures of the valuables in the church at the time of the writing. And last, but certainly not least, is Tierra of San Andreas Tetepilco, which covers the history of Tenochtitlan from the founding of it in the 14th century to the beginning of the 17th century. Many consider this last codex to be a continuation of the Boturini Codex. Translations of these three are not yet available, at least not to a layperson like myself, and all three are reported to be incomplete. However, the one that covers the history of Tenochtitlan, that guy would be worth so much more than $500,000 on the open market. I'm positive of that. I've never owned anything like that, nor have I ever had $500,000, but I can guarantee you that's the kind of thing that it's interesting to academics, to alternate historians, to armchair historians, to the History Channel would have bought the thing 25 years ago, but they might even buy the damn thing now if you come to think about it. But that's not really my main point here. What's really interesting about this is the fact that it was in just private hands for hundreds of years, just sitting in a box. And then eventually it ends up being found. What other things are sitting in private hands down there in Mexico? When the anthropologist who first heard of these started inquiring about them, she was presented with some computer screenshots and a few printouts, color printouts, but printouts of those pictures by a third party, a liaison for the family that owned these. And that's kind of a big deal to begin with. She wasn't even allowed to talk to the people that actually own the things, just an indigenous family in the region that still remains private to this day, unknown. Now, this was kind of a big deal to her because she kept trying to reach them and was concerned that these needed registered, otherwise it was like a hot ticket item for the black market. These being unregistered meant you could be grabbed and shipped out of the country and no one would know exactly what they were looking for. You could just pass it off as, you know, artistic simulation. We're just faking stuff over here, just having a good old time. It's not really a forgery even of anything. Look, what matches it? So she was very concerned, but the family didn't seem to be concerned. As a matter of fact, they didn't care at all. And she kept trying to press. She's like, hey, man, hey, I want to talk to these guys. And the liaison eventually was like, I don't want to tell you, man, they're not interested. And eventually all this just fell through and she got nowhere. So even though the anthropologist De La Paz was starting to think maybe this family didn't really have the codices at all, She still kicked the matter upstairs and went to the head of the library of the National Library of Anthropology and History. And the head of that place apparently has some pull, because I don't get the details. They're not reported anywhere that I could find, and didn't say the exact timeline, but there's no other, nothing in between. All of a sudden, he's talking to the family. He's not talking to no liaison. He's talking to the family. And he's getting the real codices verified, scientifically confirmed. And then he's giving them 9.5 million pesos, which is like $570,000, I think, or something like that. And securing them for the Mexican government, for the anthropological people over there. And now they're in a museum and being decoded and examined and all that crap. Really quickly that happened, which is kind of interesting, and we'll discuss that in a second. But again, look at the fact that this was in the hands of private families for generations. He reported that. He didn't say that how long they'd been in their families, and he didn't say what the family were. But that family had been holding, this indigenous family, we know that, had been holding these things for a very long time, generations. I'm tempted to think that it was probably all the way back to the time of Cortez. And this is where it gets really interesting to me. I mean, as we all know, Cortez destroyed tons of Aztec documents as part of taking over their government, and then lots of priests burnt their codices over the years afterwards. So it does stand to reason that a handful of families that used to be elites would get together and be like, hey man, they're destroying our culture. We're going to hide what little bit we have left. And so codices that include accounts of the Spanish get stashed away in order to provide the history, kind of doing what it's doing right now, actually make sure that future generations get that history, which is really an interesting thing to think about, because it means not only is it possible that that family has more stuff, but that other families in the region have more stuff. Because here's the thing, that in Mexico, you're allowed to own artifacts from that time period as long as you don't take them out of Mexico. So the Mexican government could well be aware of half a dozen or a dozen things like this just hiding out there that they don't talk about publicly, because they know as soon as they open their mouth, the black market's going to get involved in it. Consider the problems that they were worried about happening here. So they don't talk about that. They just keep it under wraps. We never heard about these codices until they'd already procured them, for the exact same reason. They don't want to give the black market people a heads up. But the Mexican government may well know. That could explain why the head of the Library of Anthropology and History was able to track them down so quickly. Maybe he's got a little Rolodex full of all these people's names. It's like, would these guys fall on hard times, hit these guys up with $500,000. And that might not be the case exactly, but it would track. It makes a lot more sense to me than him just figuring it out on his own. You know, Maria's out there just busting her butt for years. She can't figure it out. She kicks it upstairs, and all of a sudden he's just like, oh, she missed this. I don't think so. I think it's far more likely that he had a lever to pull that she just didn't have. At any rate, now these things are in private hands, but what else is out there that's like this? What other artifacts out there? I mean, we could probably exclude things like gold and silver, because that's the kind of thing that it's the kind of thing that people tend to steal. They find out their neighbors got it. It's just the kind of thing much harder to hide. It's possible, but it's much harder to hide. But little things, man, just a stupid instrument, a musical instrument that was played by somebody that was famous to the Aztecs all those years ago, or some bracelet that was worn by some king or some garbage like that, something that was important to somebody, garbage, I call it, no offense. It's just something that was important to somebody way back then, but to us nowadays, we might look at it and be like, well, that's really interesting, but it doesn't have a ton of value, but it had a lot of cultural significance. And to me, that's really interesting. We could also be finding codices that tell us things that, well, that might just slightly break the narrative. We don't know. What we do know is that we just found three this year, and I highly doubt they're the only three out there. I mean, honestly, it would be quite the anomaly for those to be the only artifacts that were hidden by the Aztecs when their world was getting cut down around them to pass down to their children. I think that would be insane. There's probably tons more of them out there comparatively, a dozen or so more, something like that. Just a rough estimate. Much like the actual words that are in those codices themselves, time will tell what is in the hills of Mexico in the hands of other indigenous families. And I'm going to keep an eye on that and keep an eye on the translations. And in future videos, I'm going to try to do this a little bit back and forth, where I make my little response videos or debunking videos or addressing an argument or that kind of stuff. And then we'll do these more informative ones where we just kind of talk about something and do a little edumacation. And I know that some people get sick of the drama and other people get sick of the mundane stuff. But I like both, and a lot of people like both. So I'll just bounce back and forth to keep you all entertained as best as possible. Now, I know I'm making a little bit more videos right now. I'm trying to do the best I can to keep kicking them out as quickly as possible. It really has a lot to do with how much free time I have. Big shocker there. So, if you like seeing me make more videos and you want me to spend more time on it, the best way to do that is to go down there and click on the Patreon or the Ko-fi button and help support me doing this crap. Sorry to beg, but if that doesn't work for you, I understand. You can watch the ads 10 times through and make sure and there's stuff down there that YouTube will get that will make YouTube happy if you click on. Just use your imagination. All right, thank you guys very much for watching, and I hope to see you very soon.